It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, and Jeff Cannata and Andy Iannacco are here. We're going to talk about the two big stories, actually three or four, but two of the big stories this week. Of course, tomorrow's WWDC and last week's E3. We might mention a little bit about Flame and some other big stories, too. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 357, recorded June 10th, 2012. Sex is better than Facebook. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for a free 30-day trial today at GoToAssist.com. Use the offer code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT6. And now, get free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files. Just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, and we've got a panelist of experts to talk about the week's happenings and the week ahead, which might be equally important. Let's start with my good friend Andy Iannacco, our regular host on Mac Break Weekly and a host of a fantastic show called Iannacco's Almanac on 5x5.tv. Hey, Andy.
Hey there, Leo. What a wonderful day for being in Petaluma or Boston this weekend.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day here, actually. It's kind of warm. He also writes sometimes for Sun-Times. The Chicago Sun-Times.
Several times. See, as newspapers go, the Chicago Sun-Times is in very, very good financial footing. But if there's another extra little reason why they're never going to drop their 7-day-a-week schedule, they know that every single headline will be, oh, now it's the Chicago Sun-Times. Ooh. As they drop to 5 times a week.
Like, you can't do it. Can't really go there. Also, on his yearly visit to TWiT, Jeff Cannata is here. We talk to him every week, every year after E3. We got to do this more often. Jeff Cannata, of course, the host of the Totally Rad Show on Revision 3, and just a great guy all around. Nice to have you back, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Leo. It's great to be here.
So there's two big things to talk about this week. One is E3, which wrapped up this week, and the other is tomorrow's Worldwide Developers Conference. Apple has a big show, in fact, their last big show. They only do one a year now. And all the rumors indicate that there are going to be some big-time announcements. So we'll talk about both those stories. Let's start with E3. Jeff, you were down there, obviously.
Yeah, sure was.
Some said this was a kind of a dull E3, but I think maybe dull from a gaming point of view is all sequels. I don't think there were any new franchises introduced. But
there were a couple.
Really?
Yeah, there are a couple of surprise new IPs. A game called Watch Dogs from Ubisoft was kind of a big surprise.
Cool, all right.
And some people are even saying that might be the first of the next generation games to sort of secretly be revealed. They didn't say it was next gen, but it certainly looks like it isn't possible on current gen hardware. So
Ubisoft, which does, of course, Assassin's Creed, and always has enough, Assassin's Creed, the next Assassin's Creed every year at E3, actually doing something. So what is different about Watch Dogs? Is it a first-person shooter?
No, it's an open-world game, kind of like Grand Theft Auto.
Except, love those.
You're in control of, basically, the character you play has this cool hacking ability with his futuristic cell phone, and he can hack into any part of the city that's connected to the internet.
Oh.
So this is kind of, you know, near future, where he can hack into, for example, a series of stoplights to cause a car crash, or hack into people's Facebook accounts or whatever, and find out information about them, secrets about them that he can use to his advantage. So he's always connected all the time to this massive network. And it looked like a really, really interesting, fresh concept, which is all too rare at E3 these days, I think.
It looks cinematic. It looks really cool.
Yeah, well, it definitely looks very beautiful, which is why a lot of people are thinking that this might not actually be aimed at current-gen systems. There probably will be a version for current gen systems, but it will likely not look like that Target video, which is, you know, exciting for those of us that are excited about the next gen hardware. And it didn't really make an appearance this year, but we got to see, you know, Unreal 4 kind of make a little bit of a tech demo, and we get to see a glimpse at what these next gen systems might be showing us, even if they aren't actually there.
Yeah, and it really is true that the Wii, the PlayStation 3, and the Xbox 360 are all three very long in the tooth. I mean, we're well overdue, aren't we, for new console hardware?
Definitely. And one of the big trends that I noticed at the show was that all the games that looked really spectacular that will have console versions, they were demoing them on PCs with console controllers plugged
wow.
into them.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I think we're at that point now where PCs are just far outstripping what consoles can do. And so I think it's about that time for new consoles to debut.
Well, it's also kind of good news for PC gamers that, who have felt a little left out for a while, that they now are so far ahead of what consoles could do that that's where the future of high-end gaming is going to go.
Yeah, it's always that pendulum, you know. We go to the new consoles get announced, and all of a sudden you can get bleeding-edge tech for $300 or $400. And that's really where all the excitement is, and that's where, you know, the high end is sitting. And then as those years go by, the pendulum swings to the other side, and you know, a $1,500 PC is going to be so much better than what the consoles can do. You really see the bleeding edge tech over
right.
there.
Right.
So.
Right. I want to talk about I may be wrong, but I think that the two big stories were the Wii U. And
mm-hmm.
The biggest story, at least from a tech point of view, was Microsoft's smart glass and what Microsoft's doing with the Xbox 360s. We'll talk about that. But let me find out from you, Andy, you watched it from afar, although it wasn't so hard to do. It was on TV.
Yeah, and there's just so much, as Jeff was saying before, there's just so much noise. You pretty much have to be 2,000 miles away just to protect your hearing. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting just to see the different perspectives presented from those three different major presentation events, where Nintendo really wanted to say that we have a relevance in the future of gaming as their fortunes start to wane. Microsoft, there were a lot of really nice game demos, but a lot of it was talking about, to me, the strength of their whole platform, not just whatever new titles are coming out this year. I did think the South Park demo was pretty cool. For kind of the flip reason of why those next generation games seem so cool, it's great to see absolutely cinematic looking games, but it's just as impressive when you see a game whose only goal it is to make a live gameplay animation look just as good as the animation that everybody's already completely intimately familiar with from the show week after week.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Just as good or just as bad, right?
Right. And Parker and Stone were making that point that it's really, really hard to make a game console do really crappy animation the way that we do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When they first did South Park, people thought it was like cardboard cutouts because that's what it was intended to look like. But they were using, weren't they using like a Cray supercomputer to do it?
They're using Silicon Graphics workstations to do it.
Yeah.
They do all the stuff to mimic the shadows and mimic that sort of movement. So that's actually what I'm looking forward to seeing. But also, they're really making a big point about how their Kinect system is going to inform gaming, where you have soccer games and Madden football, where you can actually just bark out the plays and remove a lot of that menu structure clutter that's on the screen of so many games by speaking of it. And then, you know, talking about smart glass and. That's really, really interesting, because the next year's worth of work is going to be someone has to lay claim to the TV sets of the world.
Right.
And no one's really done it yet. I mean, Xbox, they opened up their event with a very, very Steve Jobs, Tim Cook-like opening, which is to bark out a lot of numbers. Like, we are now the number one gaming platform in the entire world. We used to be just in the country, but now we've had the world, but it's still a gaming system. The next step is to convince people that's not just for games. It really is for all kinds of streaming entertainment. And it seemed as though every single act of their presentation was just all about how here's another kind of content that we're going to be bringing to the Xbox now. And here's another way that we're going to make it more relevant, not just for people who have like are having extra fingers surgically installed to increase their reaction times on games, but also to make it more relevant for maybe middle-aged people who aren't interested in gaming at all, but who really are interested in seeing Game of Thrones and being able to follow along a complicated plot without having to call their kids over to say, oh, who is that guy? Is that the guy from the station? Okay, so is the guy from the station agent the king? Like, Mom, there's a smart glass.
That sounds like
the
me.
Running commentary.
What? Yeah,
when they're demonstrating that, they had the part of the demonstration, it wasn't an actual shipping thing.
That's a, what's his name? What's his name?
I was instantly transported when I was taking care of my mom. watching that Jack Black movie, Shallow Hal, which had a funny movie with this odd conceit in which Jack Black's character has been hypnotized into thinking that Gwyneth Paltrow is actually like a slinky, sexy supermodel type, which is, of course, her actual body type, when in the character, her character is actually about 300 or 400 pounds. And so I'm out there on my sofa and wait a minute. So who's the fat woman? Is it Gwyneth Paltrow's sister? No, Mom.
It's her.
Sometimes we're seeing the world as Jack Black. So as soon as
a second screen is not going to help in that case. In fact, it's guaranteed to confuse even further.
Which screen do I look at?
This was the second screen E3, right? I mean, that's what seems to be the consensus.
It's really interesting. Last year, it was all about 3D and motion control.
Right.
And this year, nobody's talking about either of those. It's all about...
Well, is the Move and are the Kinect flops?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's just interesting that the focus on those things has moved. All we heard from the Kinect this year was voice control. And so now it's all about voice control and social. Social is the big new frontier. And everybody is talking about tablets and how we could connect your phone and your tablet to games in new ways. And of course, Nintendo is giving you a tablet with their new system. So everybody, I think, is buying into that idea. And it's an exciting...
You're talking about the Wii U.
Yeah.
And I mean, the weirdest video of somebody doing a Wii Fit, standing on the platform, looking down at the Wii U on the ground, and then up at the screen, that's a recipe for disaster.
Actually, yeah, I know. I've been saying that I feel like Nintendo has decided that, and maybe they have...
Here's some video. This is from the BBC of exactly this. No, bad idea.
Privy to information that I'm not, but it seems like they're more concerned with little brothers and husbands whose wives want to use the television.
Exactly. That's our market.
Maybe that's a huge market that I'm just
big
not aware
market.
Of. You know, that I'm just not, you know, not connected to. But I think little brothers will love having their own screen. But for me, as a kind of hardcore gamer, it's not right. Something that I'm excited about.
And then Sony kind of left out because all they have is really the PS Vita. So they're going to say that's a second screen. It's kind of second screen.
Well, the cross connectivity that they're showing with the Vita is pretty cool.
Okay.
The big thing they're leaving out is any kind of pricing structure that makes it viable. I mean, if I have to buy a game twice on two different systems in order to play that, it's a little less attractive to me than if they're saying, well, hey, you know, we'll throw in a second version of the game on this other console for a reduced price. I think that would be something exciting that they didn't mention. So
really, the most compelling is Microsoft's offering on the Xbox 360. It looks like Microsoft is saying, we want to make more than a gaming machine. This is going to be a set-top box that's going to give you all sorts of video and connectivity. This is a competitor to the Apple TV or the Roku, right? I mean, isn't that what they're saying?
I think from a tech perspective, yeah, that is the most exciting thing. I think from games perspective, Sony certainly showed a whole host of really exciting, interesting titles. But yeah, Microsoft is definitely doing that thing that they said they were going to do about 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, they've always wanted to do it. Yeah.
Be a convergence box for the home, and it's really happening. You know, they showed all kinds of new sports stuff that they're going to be doing, and like, I don't know, there's something.
What is smart glass though? What the hell is that?
Well, it's really interesting that they're supporting Android and iOS. So it's basically an app that you'll be able to do on those devices, and of course on Windows phones and Windows tablets as well. But it'll allow you it'll allow developers to use it in all sorts of different ways. But basically, it's a set of protocols that allow your tablet or your phone to sync up with stuff that's on your TV however a developer wants to do that. So if you're watching a television show like Game of Thrones or a film, it'll maybe give you extra info on your tablet. Or if you're playing a video game, maybe certain menu items will come up on your tablet, or someone will log on and request a game, and that'll come up on your tablet rather than on your TV screen. There's really interesting applications for that software, and it's certainly exciting that you can do it with, as they're saying, things you already own. You already own your phone, you already own your tablet, and it'll work on anything. And that's really exciting.
And I think they're smart. They're not saying you have to have a Windows 8 tablet to do this.
Very smart.
I think it was an aggressive move against both Nintendo and Apple, because Nintendo is saying, we have this great gamepad tablet, but you're going to have to lay out extra money, and it's only going to be working with our games, and we got to hope that developers are going to want to support this thing that we don't know if we're going to sell a lot of or not.
Right.
Apple, whatever they do with Apple TV, whether it's the Apple TV or the Apple no space TV that's being rumored, you can bet that they're not going to have a lot of support for Android or for Windows phone devices. This is going to be an all Apple logoed mobile show. So they're saying that, hey, look, we're not going to force you to rebuy a whole bunch of stuff. We're not going to limit you to one set of choices. We're going to give you that second screen experience with just all you got to do is download a free app for whatever device you already have. So that's a really, really powerful move, I think.
Seems Sony fumbled this one, because Sony PlayStation has a Blu-ray DVD in it. It has Netflix. I mean, it has the potential to do all of this. It seems like Sony, Jeff, am I crazy? But it seems like Sony just kind of missed the ball on this.
Well,
could make a very credible set-top box. They're Sony.
They do have a lot of the features that the Xbox has, to be quite honest. They're not trumpeting them in the same way that Microsoft is.
Well, but, and they don't have a consistent strategy around it either.
And, Microsoft announced Amazon streaming, and it had already been on the PS3.
Right.
It was already there. So Sony is doing a lot of really interesting things, but they have this whole other arm of the company, this digital film arm,
right,
that I don't think they're leveraging effectively. And I think they really could be. And, they're making a big hullabaloo about their online service, and they gave everybody in the audience at E3 a year subscription to PlayStation Plus. I think that is still half solidified into something that's really attractive for mainstream gamers. It's interesting that they give away things for free. You can get on the PlayStation online service for free, in contrast to Microsoft's Gold membership, which is $60 a year. But this PlayStation Plus, which does require a fee, they're giving away games and they're doing certain things, but it doesn't seem to have the same kind of broad entertainment appeal that some of the things that Microsoft is doing.
And of course, Apple could throw a monkey wrench into all of this, Andy, tomorrow if they announced apps on the existing Apple TV, because then presumably you could do anything that you could do, except that you have to have Apple, all Apple.
Yeah, and also that really is the problem. I mean, would they really throw a monkey wrench in it? I don't really think they're in a position right now where they can disrupt this market. This is something that I was when I wrote about this for the Sun-Times last week about E3. I was saying that whereas with Apple TV, Apple has what they actually call a hobby. With the Xbox, Microsoft has a market-leading product, and there's a difference between those two.
Right.
So it really depends. It really does depend on how each of these companies succeeds or fails in sending that message. I think Sony's problem is that they are still perceived as the PlayStation is a gaming console with a few extra value adds incorporated into it, just like they'll throw Netflix onto a lot of their smart TVs, and they'll throw Amazon Instant Video onto a lot of their Blu-ray disc players. There's just things that we'll give you for free. Microsoft, it really is being really aggressive and saying that we are bringing independent content to this box. This is a streaming network computer that excels at playing local games, but also can take in any content that you're interested in anywhere in the internet and put it onto that big screen. And given that they already really have a really large beachhead of people who aren't just simply hobbyist users or don't just use Apple TV is largely used to connect your stream stuff off of your iPad onto your screen. Xbox is really the center of the living room for so many households. It is the focal point of couch activity for a lot of these families. And so once they simply say that, hey, we're just going to make your existing subscriptions to our service even more valuable, Apple's going to have to suddenly say, here's why you really, really want to have our little $99 hockey puck, no subscription required device on your TV, or here's why you want to give us $1,800 for our own dedicated device. And I think that the way that they're going to have to do that is by being the company that has the media clout to bring in extra content that isn't available on any other service. I mean, if I could just get, I've always said the gold standard of my cable box is Turner Classic Movies. For other people, it's a different channel. But if I could just get a Turner Classic Movies app for my Apple TV, that's about 40% along the way towards canceling my cable subscription. I would use Apple TV for just about everything. So if they can strike those deals, that's going to be the differentiation that really can disrupt things. As is, they really have to start pounding the boards and convincing people that Apple has a wonderful plan for your TV set, just as they once had a wonderful plan for your phone and a wonderful plan for your tablets.
Yeah, so it's actually more than it's deals. I'll agree with you. Deals, because you have to have content. But it's also integration. It's also ease of use. It's also UI.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where, for instance, Sony seems... I am sitting with a nice TV. Actually, I have a 10-foot projection screen as well attached to a PlayStation 3. And it's a great gaming box. But I'm kind of thinking, I really wish I had an Xbox 360 on it, because that seems like that's where the future lies.
Remember that was another big... I'm sorry, go ahead. I think you're about to say what I was going to say.
Perhaps not.
Help me choose. What do I buy? I have an Apple TV. I have a PlayStation 3. Do I have to have an Xbox 360 too?
Well, of course. You have to have everything.
But, that's fine. I did give away the Nintendo Wii. I'm sorry. I'm not keeping that. I'm not buying a Wii U.
I find this conversation fascinating because it kind of points to the whole issue with E3 at this point, which is it's such a bifurcated conference as far as messaging, because here we are on a tech-centric podcast, and we're talking about how Microsoft is clearly the leader tech-wise in kind of bringing entertainment to this convergence box. But if you're talking to a very hardcore gaming audience, which I am a lot of times, everybody was really disappointed with Microsoft because they didn't feel the focus was on the games enough. So they're almost a servant of two masters in these conferences, and it's hard to please anybody where it's like, we show the newest, latest, best games, or do we, you know, kind of try to please investors and the tech crowd of looking for what is ostensibly a entertainment product, an entertainment box in our living room. And it's hard, I think, to get all that across in these conferences. And you saw Nintendo struggling with that as well. I mean, they're not so much trying to do the entertainment thing, but they kept saying over and over, oh, well, we don't have enough time to talk about this. Oh, well, we'll have the second press conference later to talk about that. It's really tricky, and I think it left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths with this E3, just purely from the press conference's point of view.
Yeah. It's very interesting that the console game platforms have not been updated, because technology is moving so fast, and they have been around almost 10 years in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. You're not going to see huge improvements in quality again, right, until we get a new platform. Jeff, are we going to have new platforms next year?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think
so that sounds like I shouldn't buy anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is sort of the waning days of these consoles. The good news about it being waning days is that the level of quality in the software is really high, because the developers know these consoles inside and out. So you're getting really high-end software, taking full advantage of the hardware.
Right.
But it's kind of late to hop on if you've been holding out.
Right. Buy a used one. I have some I can sell.
That's why I've been saying that next year I'm gonna be going like in person, because I have conversations with certain people at a couple of different of these companies, and I'm saying, well, I'm thinking about like putting that in my schedule this year. And he said, well, I'm not sure if you'll be pleased if you spend the money to come out this year, but definitely put that away for next year.
Yeah.
Hey, well, the big rumor is Vegas next year. That's the big rumor.
They're gonna move to Vegas.
That's what I hear, which is not good news for me, but...
Yeah, you're in L.A. You just walk out your door and the Staples Center's right there.
So much nicer. Sleeping in my own bed during E3 is a big deal.
Yeah, no, I know how you feel. It's very interesting. I think Microsoft has actually shown that some life in this, and it's... I think if anybody's a winner here, it looks like Microsoft has kind of surprisingly... put themselves in a very interesting position as more than a game machine, but as a set-top box as well. And I just feel like Sony, as you say, Jeff, has it all, and just hasn't been able to make a credible story around it.
Yeah, and the real boggling of the mind comes from Nintendo. It is such a strange position that they've put themselves in to be technologically.
They're not even HD. They're not even
the
HD.
Wii U. The Wii U is finally HD, but by the time it debuts, we don't even know the date on that yet. By the time it debuts, all of the hullabaloo is going to be about these next-gen consoles, and it's going to feel again like we're, you know, one step behind. And it's so strange. Their conference, they spent so much time on Batman Arkham City, which is a game that's a year old.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's a strange situation.
They won the console wars and then just gave up.
Well, I think they're playing a different game. You know?
Yeah, I don't know what game it is.
It's so strange. I feel
Mario!
I feel like I'm in this biker gang, right? And I'm all excited about the new Harleys coming out. And I'm my biker gang buddies and I are all excited to see the new hot Harley. And here's Nintendo. We walk into the room and they're like, hey, mopeds, everybody. Look at mopeds. Mopeds are fun.
Yeah.
Like, wear your helmet.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. So next year is going to be the year we'll at least see a PlayStation 4 and Xbox 720 or something like that. Announced at E3.
So it certainly seems to be that way. I mean, they showed Unreal 4 this year, and that and Frostbite 2 and the CryEngine 3 really are the engines for the next generation, and what those things can do is pretty great.
Look at it. It's just gorgeous. If you're watching the video, you can see the Unreal. But you can't play this on anything because the consoles won't support it. So,
well, they were running it on current-gen PCs. So,
yeah, it's a PC.
Not like tricked out PCs. It was pretty standard. Okay. I mean, they were modern, but the most exciting part of that engine too is how it really seems to be taking away a lot of the technical stuff out of making video games so that really artists can make video games. And
like
it's
that.
Just really a lot of plug and play and experimentation. And you don't have to be a programmer to design a video game anymore because the tools are so robust.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff. We're going to take a break. Andy Anacco is here. Jeff Cannata. Kara Swisher was scheduled to join us. She has disappeared. But, we're holding. If it's like Elijah, we've got a screen waiting anytime you want to join us, Kara. When we come back, we'll talk about WWDC, the Big Apple. I've called it. I called it last week, Andy. You'll remember. The summer of Tim. Tim Cook finally takes the spotlight away from Steve Jobs, and I think it'll happen tomorrow, but we'll find out more. In just a little bit. First, a word from our friends at Citrix, who do the fantastic GoToAssist. I know you know about GoToAssist because we've been talking about it for some time. I've been using it for even longer as a way to fix my mom's computer, for instance. If you're in IT, you know that GoToAssist is the remote support tool. In fact, it's used by more, according to IDC, more IT folks than anything else. Market share leader in remote support, but also easy to use, fast, effective. And then I love this because if you're already a GoToAssist user, you probably already noticed. Now, they said, let's make it better. Yeah, well, sure, we own the market, but why don't we make it better? And they actually acquired a company and they've added monitoring to GoToAssist support. So let me talk a little bit about this monitoring module because you'll get this as part of your GoToAssist package. In fact, I'm going to tell you in a moment how to get it for free for 30 days. If you're in the IT business, this is going to be a lifesaver. First, you install the crawler. It crawls the network, finds everything, hardware, software, network attached devices, and you can set up monitoring for it, your own dashboard that displays graphical charts, stats, key metrics on all of this hardware and software. You completely customize it, and then you can get alerts so that you know before anything goes wrong via IM, SMS, or email. It'll say, you set the thresholds, you can customize the alerts or use presets. You know, things like, well, this space below 5% on the PC and the, you know, the financial. This is the kind of thing that can make you a support hero. You fix that problem before they even know there's a problem. And then you got the live or unattended support so you can fix it. So you don't even have to get in your car. You could be the IT guy who never leaves the couch. Complete control over your network. This is going to turn you into a managed service provider. It's how our guy, Russell Tammany of Exponentia Systems, three guys, 855 clients. That's what we're talking here. It's this kind of tool that can make that difference. Managed service provider, yeah, that's you. So here's the deal. 30 days free. Just visit GoToAssist.com. Click the Try It Free button. Our offer code TWIT, as always. And you can get this for 30 days. That's the promo code TWIT at GoToAssist.com. If you're in support and you haven't tried this lately, Even if you've used the remote support module before, you've got to try it. It is a remarkable tool. Go to assist.com. Use the offer code. I'm sorry, the promo code. I want to say promo code TWIT. I am wearing my Vegas shirt in honor of E3 next year in Vegas.
Monty Cappelletti.
Making it rain on your shirt right there.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen here. This is scary. By the way, Andy Rubin has just tweeted. Apparently, there was a rumor he might leave. He's the guy in charge of Android, might leave Google. He says, no plans to leave Google. And, oh, just for meme completeness, there are over 900,000 Android devices activated every day. Wow. That is just bizarre. How can I even imagine? That's almost a million devices a day. That doesn't even sound possible.
So over a course of a year, a third of a billion devices are approaching self-awareness.
I think Skynet.
I'm trying to do the math of how many Android devices are actually being purchased. I'm not sure if that matches the velocity that I'm aware of. But
yeah, maybe people are just activating and reactivating the same old device over and over and over.
They're having to flash and reboot to get new ROMs in.
I have to say, I just got this Galaxy S3. This is the unlocked one. And wow, this has really set a standard that the new iPhone is going to really have to go after. For quad core, which is, of course, absurd. But, you know, if you can get it, why not? It's got so much, there's so much processor power in here that I actually turned on a desktop that I stopped using. They have these live wallpapers because I knew it was just using up so much battery and CPU. It's an aquarium. But, you know, there's so much extra CPU. I don't mind, you know, why not have some fish on your phone?
There's so much extra CPU on that phone that I think you can light a cigarette off the back of it.
Yeah, you'd think so, but it doesn't get that hot.
Yeah.
This screen, it's a Super AMOLED screen. It is Pentile, but I don't see any color noise. It's just a really, so this is the phone that Apple's trying to stop. They actually have already filed an injunction with the ITC to block it from the U.S., even though all four carriers are going to be carrying it June 21st for most of them, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, and Verizon. Weirdly enough, you know, this was an unlocked version I bought from Europe, and it came with 50 gigabytes, 2 years of Dropbox with 50 gigabytes free, and both Verizon and AT&T have elected not to offer that. Mm-hmm. What? So,
have you been carrying it around in your pocket?
Yeah.
Do you find it to be unwieldy and large?
Or? No, because I was carrying a note. This thing feels svelte.
I was looking at those notes at E3, and
the note is unwieldy and large. But look how thin this is. And it's lighter than an iPhone 4S. And, you know, the only thing that bugs me at all is it's so light and slippery, I know I'm going to drop this thing. Yeah. It's going to fall right out of my pocket any minute now. But it is a gorgeous phone.
We're starting to lose some ergonomics, I think, in these phone designs. I mean, the most valuable thing that I've ever added to my iPhone 4 is this nice rubberized case to it. Because, man, it will just slip out of any pocket they're going to put on it, too. It'll slide off any table you put onto.
And it's glass. It's made out of glass. This is Flipboard. They have an exclusive with Samsung for Flipboard for the Android platform, although I don't know how long that exclusive will last. But Flipboard is great on the iPhone, and it looks just gorgeous on this. And because it's such a fast phone, I mean, it just feels like butter.
Yeah, it really is almost impossible to deny. No, it's full-on impossible to deny that Android phones have really caught up with the iPhone in terms of just getting really nice phones. Yeah. There still isn't a phone that can match the iPhone 4S's camera. But if you
Andy,
want
to I
really
got bad
nice
news for you. This is the same exact Sony processor and lens that they're using the iPhone 4S.
Have you taken pictures with it?
Yeah, the software's not as good. But there's some features that I like. For instance, it has a panorama feature built in that's it's so fast that the stitching is done before you even put the phone down. I'll show you. I took a panorama a couple of days ago of graduation. Let me pull it up on my desktop. And you could see the detail in this is phenomenal. I took it sideways so I'd get more megapixels. It allows you, I think, to stitch 9 images together. I can't stop shooting panoramas, actually. Yeah. It's kind of a bad habit now.
Well, there's also something that Apple really needs to do. They really need to open up the camera API so that anybody who... Oh, there you go. Apple really... I tend to like Android camera apps more than I like Apple's built-in iPhone app. Because on Android, you can actually just do something as simple as simply say, look, I don't want to have to like fumble and tap on like the place that I want to, you to do the exposure point from. Could you just, this the last one was a little bit dark. You just simply like overexpose it by a stop and call it like that. That's a feature of just about every built-in Android phone, Android camera phone
app.
You can't do that on an iPhone because you have access to the camera, but you don't have access to like low level features of its operation. So Apple, I really wish Apple would just open up all the APIs and let people write whatever camera app that they want that takes advantage of the full
the
hardware.
The Samsung camera app is pretty good. They have HDR built in, the video 1080p, and I think you do have a nice processor. This is kind of a strange shot, but it's 1080p, and the quality and the frame rate is just excellent on this. That's an unusual ceiling fan I'm showing here. But no, I've been very impressed with the camera in this phone. I think you're right. I think the Apple software is probably marginally better in terms of the resulting photos. But this is the same hardware as Apple is selling. So basically, you've got Apple now. The pressure is on, I think, with the next iPhone. And they have a few months. So it's, you know, they have time to do something. But boy, this is, if you could see this in person, Andy, you would flip.
I have the HTC X, and that's it's really,
yeah,
really
also cool. very
good. I've been liking that one a lot too.
Yeah, very 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 good. I like.
When are we thinking the new iPhones are being announced? Is that
what are we I'm thinking?
Ready? Yeah, definitely not next week, right?
No,
maybe tomorrow. I don't know.
I think likely. I mean, here's what we know: iOS 6 will be talked about, and Mountain Lion will be talked about. I think Apple will probably say, "Here's a date for Mountain Lion," and I would guess it'll be July. Might be my guess. But I think that they're not going to say anything about the iPhone 5 particularly because they don't want to kill sales of the 4 yet, right?
Well, it depends. One of the biggest rumors is that they're going to change the aspect ratio of the screen for the first time in the entire series of the iPhone.
Right.
And they might have to talk to developers about how they're going to be able to support a single iPhone app that can be either 16:9 or whatever the new aspect ratio is in the old kind. If they have to do that, then they might have to at least show off this new phone.
You think so? Yeah, because you're right. They have to tell developers, hey, get ready, guys. Here it comes. And, you know, we have seen that part. And there's, I think in my mind now that you've seen video as well as pictures of the new iPhone frame, that's a genuine part, right?
Yeah. Also, this is right about the time when you would... If this part video had come out in, let's say, February, you would think, okay, it's another person who came across some sort of a part from some sort of production line and decided to, you know, laser carve an Apple logo on it and call it like an actual iPhone 5 part. Right before a developer event where supposedly they're going to have a lot of engineers, where they might be able, where Apple might be preparing to actually take the wraps off of something, this is when security tends to dip a little bit by necessity, and you at least start to open your mind a little bit to the possibility that these kind of leaks are genuine. I mean, you can barely keep up with all the rumors that start flying starting 4 days before a keynote. And it's because suddenly they have to start giving more information to the retail channel.
Right.
Suddenly stores have to be ready to stock things, not just the Apple stores, but the independent stores. Price lists start to appear. And so that's when you really start to – it's difficult to really turn off the flow of information because so much of that information is actually good now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree with you. That does look like a really good part. If it's a fake or if it was for some sort of a, you know, Shenzhen back alley fake iPhone, they really went to incorrect lengths for a very simple demo.
How does this change things? I mean, so it's taller. It looks tall and thin. What is –
Yeah, It's definitely taller. That would the leading theory is that Apple wants to have a 4-inch screen. However, they don't want to make it thicker, and they don't want to lose the concept of we have an actual Retina quality display where the resolution is so high that the human eye can't distinguish individual pixels. And so rather than make it actually larger like an Android phone, they're keeping the regular width but changing it to like a more widescreen aspect ratio. That'll let them have a 4-inch screen and it will let them have a Retina display. But if they stretch the display like that, that'll give them an extra bank of pixels to deal with. So that one answer to that might be that they'll let you run legacy apps by just simply centering it within a window. Another might be that they're going to have like a different type of The developers can create graphics and UIs for this different layout screen if it's available. And another idea might be that they're just going to use that extra space for something system-wide, like not just a home button, but a home like a home dock that's persistent, or some element of UI that never goes away. The case part is actually a back plate, so you don't see the front plate.
Right.
So if they decided to make the home button actually a soft button from now on, where it's always on the screen, but it's no longer a mechanical button, that might be one way to get that answer. But I don't think that Apple would get rid of their one mechanical button. I do think that having one distinct button that you can activate by touch without having to orient yourself visually, I think that's an actual big feature. Also, remember that one big mechanical button is what makes the iPhone the most accessible device for people with low vision and vision impairment out there. So I don't think they'll get rid of it. I can't guess as to what the extra aspect ratio is going to be for, but I hope they don't just make this a silly. We don't want to make it bigger, so we decided to come up with this oddball aspect ratio just so that we can make ourselves happy.
The thing that's very scary or odd is that the bottom now doesn't look like it has a 30-pin connector.
Yeah.
That looks like it's roughly the size of a micro USB connector. Do you think that's where Apple is heading?
They might be deciding to change to a new connector. I don't think that would go to micro USB, because remember that 30-pin connector, they use so many of those signals. It's not just for data, and it's not just for power. There's also a video channel. There's also an audio channel. That's how you can oftentimes plug in microphones to that jack. Right. So they would have to come up with something that would duplicate that kind of functionality in a smaller form factor.
So a proprietary connector then.
It would also be exactly. Remember, that's also a way that Apple maintains control over third-party accessories, because you have to license that, and if you want to make an actual iPhone compatible accessory. The other interesting thing is, if you look at the bottom, they also move the headphone jack right next to it.
It's on the bottom now, right? Instead of the
exactly.
top.
Exactly. Yeah. So that makes sense too. Instead of having this thing that looks now looks like a Christmas cracker with wires coming out of the top and the bottom, and it may as well have them both coming out of the bottom, which is aiming toward the head anyway.
Right. I guess. What I'm worried about is I think so many people have such an investment in 30-pin accessories, that including docks. And I mean, I have a huge investment in that. All of those are, well, maybe Apple will sell a $50 connector. I don't know.
I guess what I'm hoping more than anything else, that I hope they have a darn good reason for disrupting everything. That if they can say that this connector served us really, really well for 3-4 years, it's underserving us now for all the stuff we want to do in the future. And so here's now what this new micro port is going to do for us. Okay, then I can see that. But if it's just that, well, we were upset that we're looking for a way to shave an extra 0.75 millimeter off of it, and unfortunately this plug was just getting in the way, so we had to redesign a smaller plug, but hooray, our new iPhone is now 0.75 millimeter slimmer than the old one.
Yeah, I couldn't
Thank
agree
you.
More, man. I feel like I maintain brand loyalty because I'm so pot committed on all these accessories and apps that I've purchase, and if you give me a reason, and all these other sexy phones are coming out, and I'm like, ooh, kind of getting phone envy. If you give me another reason, like, oh, you're gonna have to rebuy everything, then it gives me another jumping off point to go
That's
to another
point.
Brand.
Banners are going up at Moscone West, where the speech will be tomorrow, just down the road a bit, and we see the iOS 6 banners. People are peeking in the door and taking pictures of it, and of course, we knew that there would be. iOS 6 spoken about. Now, iOS 5 was a big jump, big improvement for iPad and iPhone. I think we could safely assume this will be more incremental, but there will be one massive change, at least according to the rumors, and that is Google Maps will no longer be part of the operating system. I suppose you'll still be able to get Google Maps from Google as an app, but Apple has its own map app with 3D and a lot of features, and I think that's all pretty credible since they've been buying mapping companies for the last couple of years, at least 3 mapping companies. And they even admitted when they got in that kerfuffle over collecting data on the iPhone and storing it that what they were really doing is trying to save data for a future app that would tell you about traffic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So not much of a surprise if they do, in fact, dump Google Maps. Google kind of, I think, is expecting this because Google had its own mapping event on Wednesday, a minor mapping event in which they talked about new features of Google Maps for Android. They have turn by turn, and they wanted to have offline maps so you can download them ahead of time. And yeah, what a surprise. 3D imagery. They also have, go back a little bit there, Chad, because there's a great shot of the guy with the Google backpack that you walk around. It's the new Street View Trekker version. You know about Street View, the special cars they drive around, take pictures of what it looks like from street level. Now they have one that you can walk around Yosemite or a conference center or a store and be wearing.
I'm pretty sure isn't that the same backpack that Chewbacca was wearing in Empire?
Yeah. Turn around, you fool. I can't map that storefront. Furry lummox.
I think you need to be Chewbacca size to wear it. That thing is massive. There's Rafe Needleman of CNET trying to put it on.
What really worried me is that, so when they're showing off their new 3D maps, which is let you essentially do your own helicopter tour of any intersection, they reveal that now Google has their own Air Force.
I know.
They send up their own airplanes, yes, flying in formation.
Oh, boy.
And you just know that they didn't use the canisters of nerve agent, but they wanted you to know that the canisters were there.
We could. Really, they're flying low over cities in special Google planes to get 3D mapping, and they won't say what cities.
Right. Or what the antidote is.
If everybody suddenly goes to sleep at the same time, you'll know why.
Maybe that is their strategy. Like every alternate week, they're spraying cities with toxin and antidote. And they're saying, well, that's fine. You can shut down our mapping operation, but we'll ground those planes. And I guess some people are just not going to get that antidote. Oh,
oh man.
You're the Justice Department. You know best.
I'm sure that that's one of the reasons for the Andy Rubin tweet as well, is that Google is doing a kind of proactive. I mean, look, everybody knows you cannot control the news cycle. On Apple keynote week. I mean, they own that news cycle. So Google's wised up. Instead of putting their event later, they're saying, well, let's try to get what we can the week before because everybody's going to forget about us the week after. We will do live coverage, by the way, of WWDC keynote here at Twit. You can tune in. Of course, you know, every blog's doing it live, but what we do is we watch all the live blogs and then we talk about it. We analyze it with Chris Breen of Macworld, Tom Merritt, and Sarah Lane of TNT, and I'll be there as well starting 9:30 Pacific, 12:30 Eastern tomorrow, Monday, for the WWDC keynote. Then right after the keynote, Andy will join us, along with, I hope, Jason Snell by phone, because he's going to be at the keynote, and we'll do a Mac break weekly and give you the analysis of what we heard. I really do think we're going to – I believe the rumors. I don't know, Andy, you let me know what you think, but and Jeff too, but I believe the rumors that we're going to see – Retina displays, we're going to see new MacBook Pros. I think we might see new Mac Pros. I'm sure the developers in the audience will be happy to hear that. Featuring USB 3 as well as a Thunderbolt, which the Mac Pros currently do not have. I would love to see new MacBook Airs with Retina displays. I think that would be very cool. You agree, Andy? I mean, we've seen the parts list.
Yeah, we've seen parts lists. We've also seen apps appearing on the App Store with descriptions of, and now this macOS app has been upgraded for new Retina graphics.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And that it's so you know that developers have been working on it. And also, Apple doesn't – you might think that's a dead confirmation that, well, geez, if Apple actually let this app appear in the App Store, then they must be okay with people knowing that. Well, it's also possible that it just slipped through. But the fact that so many different parts lists are making it on the internet, and that no one's really challenged them so far, and again that this is happening so close to WWDC, and that stocks on replacement hardware have been kind of low over the past month or two, that's pretty good indication that we're going to see something brand new tomorrow.
And didn't we see that the Mac Pro that was also on limited allocation with some stores? Yeah.
Yeah, that one. I mean, that one's been lingering so long in the med war that
really
people
do.
Have actually been wondering if Apple was ever going to update it again. But I think that this may or may not be the last major rev of the Mac Pro. But I was always certain there was at least going to be one more.
This is bizarre. So one of the apps that now is featuring Retina ready displays is Folder Watch. One of the apps that really really doesn't need a Retina display, but it says under what's new. Retina graphics. So I could see how that Apple might have missed that. And who knows? I mean, but why a folder program needs Retina graphics is beyond me.
Yeah, I also wouldn't. I think the 11-inch Air is the most is the one machine in the lineup where a Retina display would be the most advantageous. It's the one display that After I've been using it for a couple of days, it's like, oh man, that really is kind of hard to read.
Kind of small, yeah.
But I would be really surprised if they can actually put it into that machine and still have a $999 price point. But hey, they put it into a $490 iPad, so what do I know? The other idea is that's not so much that they're going to be cramming more megapixels into the display itself, but simply making existing graphics easier to read, and that they're going to do away with monitor settings that show you, well, here is the pixel resolution at this level, at this level, at this level. They're just going to simply say, here is the amount of density of the display. You can have it good, better, best, and awesome, and just take your pick as to what is going to be best in your eyes and what you need for this, whatever display technology you're using right now.
You know, I just realized that. I'm using an MacBook Air 11-inch in front of me. It's 1280 by 800. My phone is 1280 by 720. I mean, it's actually almost...
Yeah.
So you're right. I think we need a...
It's amazing to think that, like, this new iPad that I've got next to me right now, I don't have a computer anywhere in my... I'd have to double-check, but I'm not sure that I have a computer anywhere in my house that has a display that has more pixels on the screen than this iPad right here.
Right.
And it's a tiny little screen. It's supposed... Like, that sort of acreage... That sort of number of dots is supposed to be for, like... Final Cut and Photoshop and all their tool palettes all on the screen at the same time.
What do you think that from a purely psychological point of view, it feels like this is Tim Cook's chance to shine, right? Steve passed away now 8 months ago. Steve's last big keynote was WWDC 2011. Isn't this Tim's? It's a decent amount of time. Tim's chance to step forward and say, "Here I am."
I'm not sure. You could give that same role to Phil Schiller, and say another VP of marketing. And it's when he's not just like some marketing feeb. He really is like the guy who understands everything that Apple's doing and the direction of the company. He has been very, very hands on in development. I'm not sure that we're going to see anybody who's going to. I'm not sure they even want to do a keynote the way that Steve did it because they don't have somebody with that kind of presence. I think that we're going to see Tim come on and be the master of ceremonies at the beginning and the end. I think he's going to hand it off to Phil. And I think that we're going to have other VPs and other engineers handle different sections and different segments of it. So I don't think that we're going to see one continuous personality that's going to be our MC for the whole thing. Tim Cook as Joel Grey is not something that anybody wants.
By the way, now Zugu is reporting, and I don't know if I buy this, with a picture of the back of a mini iPad, a 7-inch iPad. They say, at first they said it would be announced tomorrow. Now they're saying it will not be announced at WWDC. You guys, you developers in the audience. Fragmentation? Or do you like the idea? Does it bother you?
I don't know. That doesn't look like an iPad.
I think this
part.
Is a fake. I think this is.
It really doesn't.
This is almost certainly a fake.
The contours at the bottom.
This is wrong. Yeah.
That's not the. Just on the basis of I don't see Apple making something that shape. Also, I don't see. I spoke before about there's certain leading indicators that cause me to believe that a rumor is true above and beyond the actual reality of what I'm looking at.
Right.
I have not seen incidental indicators that there's a smaller iPad coming out tomorrow. If they did that, I'm not sure that they would want to take the wraps off of it tomorrow.
I just don't understand what the desire for a 7-inch pad is. It's not like all of a sudden that's more portable to me.
Yeah, I agree.
The theory is that Apple right now absolutely owns tablets. There is just no challenge whatsoever. Another thing I wrote last week, a line that I was proud of, if maybe needlessly so I'll repeat it here. People compare Android tablets to the Titanic. Well, no, that's not fair because the Titanic did not back off and re-ram the iceberg twice. And that's why the Titanic is actually better than the Android tablet. But it's the idea is that Apple might have decided they want to go into 7-inch tablets just to make sure that no one else can get a foothold. Tim Cook in previous market calls have been asked questions about the Android based Kindle Fire tablet, acknowledging that it's a good product, acknowledging that it's doing okay, but also saying that according to their research and their beliefs, they don't believe that the Kindle Fire is competing with the iPad. But at some point, somebody's going to have a big enough success that they're going to feel like they're leaving some money. Either they're leaving money on the table or they're creating an opportunity for somebody else. I think that that's – it's not exactly – a 7-inch tablet for Apple, I don't think it's necessarily the third rail. It's not as though they would never touch it. But they were pretty vocal about how they thought about a 7-inch tablet. They willfully skipped over it in favor of a 10-inch tablet because they don't think a 7-inch tablet really, really works. But there could be a time when they're going to need – if the market says that, hey, we really love these 7-inch tablets. We love having something that we don't necessarily need to carry around in a separate laptop bag for. And we don't really want this to be a full iPad-like experience. We just want a really, really good e-reader. And if they figure out that, you know what, we can make a really good one of those. We can make a really big iPod Touch for $199 and absolutely eat everybody's lunch with it. And more importantly, do it better than Amazon is doing it with the Kindle Fire, then maybe they'd stick a toe in and see how it worked.
Looks like, by the way, I just saw a report that the Kindle Fire is not, in fact, the number two tablet. Samsung is number two in the tablet market. Kindle Fire, a distant third. So not exactly. What that shows me is it's not just price. People really are looking for functionality. There isn't a $200 market for a $200 tablet market. If you're going to buy, because nobody needs a tablet. So if you're going to buy a tablet, you're going to buy an iPad probably, right? And you're not going to necessarily go for it.
It's still really interesting, though, because everybody's still sort of deciding the role of a tablet in their lives. And right. it really did take me a full year with the iPad before I realized that this is the reason why I'm not interested in a MacBook Air. Because for everything that I need that's mobile, given that I'm not someone who has to edit, I don't have to edit video or do that heavy, intensive stuff. Really, my job on the road is to develop and give presentations, write, research stuff, and keep in touch with everyone I have to keep in touch with. And for that, my iPad does a handsome job of it. When I travel, I do keep a Bluetooth keyboard with me. But otherwise, why would I want to travel with a notebook computer and an iPad when an iPad can really do pretty much everything that I wanted to do all in one? It really is a case of all of these pieces sort of readjusting themselves on the game board to accommodate this classic computer that never existed before. And that's why I'm so fascinated by what's going to happen at the end of the year when we start to see Windows 8 tablets that act as a really nice ideally will act as a nice hybrid between a desktop tablet, a desktop notebook computer, and a really nice mobile device, so that you don't have to keep traveling with two different separate computers, and you can spend $1,000 on one thing that does everything instead of buying a $1,200 one of these and a $500 one of those. Right. So, in great motion is the future in tablets, as in everything else.
Where do you stand on the tablet scene, Jeff Cannata? Are you an iPad user?
I am. It's the first device I touch in the morning and the last device I touch at night.
Not the first thing you touch, but the first device you touch.
First device, yeah. Okay. Let's be honest. I also have a Sony Tablet S that they sent me, and I was very excited about that because of all the sort of PlayStation functionality and interesting things, but it doesn't compare.
Yeah.
It doesn't even compare. And and you can say what you want about the market, but iPad for me, it is an experience that created a new type of leisure for me, and I only enjoy it because of how snappy, how quick, and how it's exactly what Jobs kept saying. It is the best web browsing device I own, and I love that about it, and I browse the web a hell of a lot, and I like not having to be on my laptop or my PC, and I only basically use it for that. I don't need tons of extended functionality. I like answering emails and I like browsing the web on reclining on my couch or still lying in bed using my iPad. It's that simple for me.
Of course, gadget hounds love it, but I wonder for normal people if it's just, it's hard to make a strong case why you have to have it. It's a very much of a luxury device, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, for me it is. Like I say, it created a new type of leisure for me.
Right.
I worry because, I think you guys have talked about this before, but I find myself multitasking with it far more than I ever did with my laptop or any other computer. And I wonder about just attention disruption, splitting my attention. I tend to, I'm watching a television show and 4 seconds of boredom, I pick up my iPad and check to see if I got any new emails. I worry about that. I feel like it's not a good thing, really.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on that. I don't know. I think you can't go wrong making a device to distract people.
That's true.
It may not be good for people, but you cannot go wrong.
New from Sony, jingling car keys. The line forms at midnight. On that point, that's one of the reasons why I kind of think that for what I do, the iPad is kind of superior because it's exclusively a one window interface. So it makes it when I need to really just pound out a column, I can switch over to Safari. I can switch over to Twitter if I want to. But there's so many steps involved that it sort of defies easy distraction. It really does reward me for just sitting focused and saying, well, okay, I'll check Twitter when I finish this, but I really got to finish this before I check Twitter.
Yeah, for me, it is actually the first thing I touch every morning. There's nothing else worth touching. Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. We're going to take a break. Jeff Cannata is here from TRN. I called you Cannata. You know why I did that, Jeff? Because Gina Trapani always wants me to call her Trapani. And I think all you iTies, you're
Italians,
trying to... So is it Cannata or is it...
It's Cannata.
Cannata. Hey. Jeff Cannata. Hey, Kanata's here. Yeah.
That's right. Now you sound like my grandfather.
From the Totally Rad Show. Yeah. You love that guy. He's great. He's great. JeffKanata.com. Yeah. And, of course, Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. I imagine classical music playing at all times in the Iannacco home. What is that, a varmint behind you? What is that? Is that a squirrel? Is that a weasel?
I was very pleased. That's the senior background groundhog. I had not seen in a few months, so I wondered if Senior Groundhog had gone to meet its maker. But then I suddenly saw him, like, literally on his... When I do these podcasts, if I'm suddenly talking, then I suddenly go... Sometimes it's because a groundhog is literally on his back legs, like against the window, just sort of looking in.
Wow.
That literally happens once or twice. So it's like, oh, Senior Groundhog, you're alive. Okay, good. That's fine.
That's almost exactly the same experience I have here in L.A., except instead of groundhog, it's crackhead.
Crackhead. Senior Crackhead is still with us. He's pressing his nose against the window, but let me in. You got any nuts? But
I'm not looking for a handout. I'm just looking for a hand. I have no opposable thumbs. I bit them off when I was high on bath salt.
You know, Senior Groundhog needs a website, and if he were going to make a website, the best place to do it would be Squarespace.com. Why? Because it is the best hosting plus the best software. You can get everything you need to create an amazing site. In fact, now with a year subscription, they'll even hook you up with your own custom domain name, seniorgroundhog.com, and they'll hook it up to the Squarespace thing. So the whole thing just all works together. It's a great deal right now. Squarespace.com. Just fantastic. Give it a try. So here's the deal. They have this great big green button on the front that says try it free that gives you full access to the Squarespace tool. So you really can get an idea for 2 weeks of what's possible. You can import your existing site using their seamless importer tools for movable type, WordPress, Typepad, or Blogger. By the way, those APIs really cover 90% of all the stuff that's out there. And export, too. So you're never trapped. Not that you'd ever want to leave. Not when you see like the Squarespace apps for iOS or Android that let you post, moderate, and even see stats. Did I say stats? The best stats in the business. I mean, you really can get such great information about what people are doing on your site. Complete SEO support, site mapping, and all the work. So you don't even have to think about it. Look, you got a choice. Some people want to do it all themselves, become experts in web design and all the tools. And some people just want a great site. And they, you know, and truthfully, you could do both with Squarespace. If you're a CSS guy, they've got CSS editing, pop-out editor that does syntax, coloring, and everything. They've got complete JavaScript access, but you don't have to. You don't have to focus on the technology. You can just focus on the content. And really, I think, truthfully, that's what Squarespace shines at. Give it a try for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, you'll be very pleased at their new pricing model. Two plans, both annual, $8 a month. Actually, you can do month to month, but the best savings is on the annual plan. $8 a month for the basic site. But I think this one, the $16 a month, is pretty amazing. Now, that $16 a month, you get unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage. You get the custom domain, the 24/7 support, plus you get what they call audiences, which means you can have people with password access to certain parts of your site. They editors, the advanced control, the form builder, the user registration, the business features, $16 a month. And here's a deal. You're going to get 10% off if you use the offer code TWIX6. So your first purchase, use the offer code TWIX6 and get 10% off. Plus, when you buy an annual package, you get the domain registration, the deal. It's fantastic. Squarespace. Look at that. Go look at the sample sites. You'll see how gorgeous
they
look
are. At that. Totally right there.
Wait a minute. Hey, you use Squarespace? What the?
JeffGanata.com is on Squarespace. I love it.
I'm preaching to the choir here. Yeah. Has your site, now look, you drive a lot of traffic. Has your site ever gone down? I mean, this thing is rock solid.
What I love is the iPhone app where I can like update, check stats all on the go. It's pretty sweet.
Yep.
It's really cool.
Yeah. It makes it easier to blog. And after all, isn't that what you want? For a blog, a photo site, a photographer, a portfolio, e-commerce, whatever you're doing, squarespace.com, offer code TWIT6 for 10% off your first purchase. Make it the annual plan. You'll get the best savings. I forgot that you guys use Squarespace.
Yeah, so we love it.
That's cool.
Awesome, though.
Yeah. How's Alex doing?
He's doing very well. He's got that new show, 4 Points. He's doing very well.
What's 4 Points? I don't know about that.
It's on the Nerdist Network.
Oh, that Chris Hardwick, he's going to put me out of business. Tell you, that guy. Between Dan Benjamin and Chris Hardwick, I feel this breath, hot breath coming down my neck.
All those kids.
Could be that Google box I've been wearing in back there.
Time to enact Operation Monkey Monkey Alpha.
Yes.
With have your producer bring the orange briefcase.
Annihilation of all competition. All right, now we talked about it before the show, and I'm not going to do any spoilers. I know, Jeff, you loved Avengers.
I did.
This is the pre-qualification. I did not like it so much. Andy, Avengers, good or bad? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Ragingly mediocre. It bored me halfway through. I'm happy that a lot of people were entertained by it. That's fine. I don't agree with that. I don't argue with that.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. It was no Iron Man.
You guys must not love.
We love
and fun and happiness and joy.
And we love Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
But this is pre-qualification for the actual question, because the big movie now is Prometheus.
Mm.
Seen it?
Yeah. Seen it. Our review comes out tomorrow.
Okay. We won't do the whole thing because you guys want to save save your powder.
Well, I don't mind. I would say lower your expectations.
Andy, we were saying that to you before the show. He and I agree. It's not bad.
No.
It's not bad.
I started the show with giddy with enthusiasm and pleased with the cinematic, but no, you two guys had to go and jump in my rowboat and start drilling holes in it.
Okay.
We're doing you a favor.
We're preparing you.
By going in, going, oh, wow. And then you're just like, oh, it's so much better than I expected, rather than
I do this out of spite and retaliation. The entire third act of the Avengers movie is unnecessary. There, I said it.
It's true.
Now it's been ruined for
you. It's true.
Oh, you mean the giant fun space battle?
The giant fun space battle.
Yeah, you mean the battle of Midtown Manhattan, north of 42nd, south of the park, between 5th Avenue and 7th Avenue? Oh, man, what a horrible, horrible space invasion battle that was.
It did seem they were somewhat focused, wasn't it? It was just
maybe the aliens should have sent down, like, weapons and ships that could not have been brought down by a woman with a 9mm handgun. Maybe they should have actually brought down the really good stuff.
Oh, I am going to Hulk smash all over.
Hulk smash was the highlight of the movie, though.
Maybe Nick Fury, instead of just like watching this whole battle on big screen TV, thought, hey, wait a minute. We've got fighters. We've got people with guns. Maybe we should send some of our... Oh, wait, no. We've got 6 guys down there. I'm sure they'll be fine.
They tried.
Pass the popcorn. Man, this is a great TV set.
They were going to nuke New York. And our heroes saved the day.
Yeah, exactly. It's like...
You know what the highlight of Prometheus was for me? The trailer for the new Quentin Tarantino movie.
Oh, Django Unchained.
Oh, my God. That's going to be the best movie ever made.
I was just a little sad that Kurt Russell dropped out, because I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan. And I was sad that he seems like a perfect fit for that kind of movie.
Oh, but I like the guy. Jamie Foxx is in it. He's Django. Yeah.
Right.
But then I really like the guy they chose. I presume that was the Kurt Russell character for the gunfighter. Because it's the guy who was the milk-drinking Nazi in Inglourious Bastards.
Right.
Who won an Oscar, right? I mean, this guy is an amazing actor.
Yeah.
And now I just think it's going to be it's the funniest looking movie I ever saw in my life. Anyways, Kill Bill meets blaxploitation movies.
Can't go wrong with Quentin Tarantino as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So what was Ken Russell?
I don't know what role he was playing, to be honest with you.
Oh, he's going to play somebody else. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But go to Prometheus and get there early so you can see that trailer. Of course, you're right. Now I have unreasonable expectations for that movie. It'll probably be terrible. I just think any movie called Django Unchained.
It's a great title, right?
D is silent.
That Batman, of course, is going to be. I can't wait for Dark Knight Rises.
We were talking about that. I don't like villains who have gas masks. So I want to see his.
Tom Hardy, it's gonna make it work. He's
really?
Gonna make it work.
It's hard to make that work. You
gotta trust in the Nolan.
Yeah,
I have to admit, not since Benicio del Toro in The Usual Suspects have we had a villain that no one understands one word that he says.
Benicio was good in that movie, though. I loved it.
I'm doing a play right now in L.A., and the girl that I'm acting opposite was the stand-in for Catwoman on Dark Knight Rises.
Oh.
And she had told me that it is not going to disappoint.
Does she look like Anne
Hathaway?
Hathaway?
That's not exactly.
That's my imaginary girlfriend.
Is it?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, see, my question is, did she get to ride the bike?
She did, actually.
Which just shows you where our interests might diverge slightly.
That's the picture you want to have to show your kids and then your grandkids and then live along to show your great-great-grand. This is your grandma on the flipping bat side.
I'm not sure I'm supposed to tell this anecdote, but evidently there was a crack in the top of the bike when she was sitting on it, and Nolan came over and he said, "Did you do that?" And she's like, "No." He's like, "You know, this is $1 million. This bike is $1 million. And she's like, "That's more than I'm worth."
You so. Cracked the bat cycle. The bat cycle, you cracked it. All right, as long as we're in this genre, Game of Thrones, the most pirated show of 2012.
It just means it's the most one of the most popular titles.
Right.
Of
2012. I think it's pretty much synonymous. Yeah.
Well, also, it speaks to how difficult it is to get HBO.
You
really have to make a really overt gesture in order to get it when the series is showing. And it really just proved that people don't necessarily want to wait that long. It's sort of an understandable human impulse to say, well, I can either wait. Torrenting is so easy now that I can either wait a year to get it on, get it legally, or I can actually watch it right now. And, well, why don't I just watch it right now?
Well, this
it's
is
also a show that's aimed squarely at nerds.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know. Sex in the City was the most downloaded show because it was on HBO.
Right.
You know?
That's a good point. Nerds, HBO, BitTorrent. Made in hell.
I have to say that the Murder, She Wrote reunion movie was the single most downloaded movie off of AOL.
Maybe.
No, that was the... Hey, grandson, tell me how to download this.
Hey.
Murder, She Wrote.
There is a tech angle to this, besides the Pirate Bay angle. Which is that people have been petitioning HBO to make HBO Go available to people who don't have cable subscriptions. You know, you can't be a cord cutter and get HBO Go. You have to, your cable company has to give you permission, and you have to log in on HBO Go. That's the iOS and Android app that lets you watch HBO to your cable company account. And in fact, people were saying how much they would pay for it. We'd be willing to pay, $12 a month or whatever it was. And HBO said, no, don't get your hopes up.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen in the near future. A couple of reasons being that we live in a digital world, so we feel as though everybody's buying their comic books digitally, everybody's getting all their entertainment digitally, everybody would buy streaming HBO, when actually that's just a fraction of the actual market for it. So you're asking HBO to like really, really screw up their biggest money-making relationships with all the cable companies in order to start selling a service that would then require the cable company's help to deliver via broadband. So that's never going to fly. And the other thing is that it's my understanding that HBO Go is not served by HBO. It's actually served through the same cable company that you're subscribing from. So then HBO would have to figure out how are we going to serve all of this content ourselves? And it's just a big mess.
Well,
I agree, though. I would buy channel after channel a la carte And I've keep reevaluating that question about cutting the cable, I keep thinking about, well, how difficult would it be to simply say, I don't like the idea of having to go out and look for Game of Thrones off of a torrent every time I want to get access to a show. But would it be so difficult for me to wait a year to be a year behind, but still be able to get this stuff like just for one $36 payment and then own all the episodes as opposed to getting it part 1 week at a time and mediocre resolution that I can't keep on my iPad? So I don't know. I get closer and closer every single time.
The real win for HBO Go is that it's not just what's
it's
on
second
HBO.
Screen.
Well, it's what has always ever been on HBO.
Right,
it's
everything.
Of HBO.
Right.
And that's the real win.
But it's also got additional features. It's like your DVD extras in real time. I mean, isn't it what the smart glass? That was the demo. Was you're watching Game of Thrones and you have no idea? Well who is the imp?
You see that stuff.
Yeah, right. That's not HBO Go. That's just it. Just gives
no,
you the
but
program.
But HBO does have. And by the way, HBO pushes HBO Go like crazy. Like, want to see more? Want to know what really happened? Want to understand who the hell these people are? Watch it on HBO Go.
Want to get tricked into watching a 2-minute clip when you actually
exactly.
wanted the entire episode?
Exactly.
Of
it's BS. Yeah. So a guy named Jay Caputo has created a site, probably a Squarespace site, called Take My Money HBO. At TakeMyMoneyHBO.com, we pirate Game of Thrones. We use our friends' HBO Go login to watch True Blood. Please, HBO, offer a standalone streaming service and take my money. And then he asks, how much would you pay? Andy, how much would you pay for a standalone HBO Go streaming service?
For HBO, I'd pay $15 a month.
How much would you pay, Jeff Cannata?
Wow, that's a tough question. I mean, I think 15 is the upper limit of what I would pay.
15. Let's
say
I'm going to tweet it right now.
I would definitely pay whatever I pay for Netflix. I'd be willing to pay for HBO.
Okay. Oh well, Netflix is only $8.
But if we live in a world where it's $15 a month for any one channel, how many channels are you going to subscribe to?
Right.
Well, we didn't say any one channel. If the one channel is HBO and it gives me access to. Truly, not just whatever's airing today, but this is access to every single title HBO has the rights to. If you want to see two seasons worth of Game of Thrones, if you want to see two seasons worth of Boardwalk Empire, if you get hit in the head, you become crazy, stupid, and suicidal, and you want to watch every episode of Sex and the City, including Sex and the City 2, you can actually watch all of that yourself. That's for me. That one channel would be worth $15. I think everybody maybe has that one channel. I was saying earlier about Turner Classic Movies. I just have an unnatural love for all the programming that's on that channel. So yeah, I would happily pay again a Netflix grade monthly fee for just that one channel. And by the time you wheedle down the 430 channels on my cable box to just the three or four that I would like, even if I were paying $9 a channel for it, I'd still come out way, way, way ahead. And I wouldn't notice the spear phishing channel gone.
That's why the cable companies, by the way, are never going to let this happen. Because they make money selling you that other crap.
It's like the air conditioning, you've got to buy the undercoating too.
but a cautionary tale from the record industry. They did that with CDs. They put one good song and a bunch of bad songs in a CD, and they try to sell you the whole CD. And that whole thing is gone now. This has actually spawned a new word, oatmealing. Don't look it up on Urban Dictionary. Apparently had a meaning before this. But nowadays, in fact, a really disgusting meaning. You've seen the oatmeal. I know you're a big fan of the oatmeal.com. I tried to watch Game of Thrones, and this is what happened.
Hey, what you doing?
Just finished watching Game of Thrones, reading Game of Thrones. Now I'm seeing if the TV show's on Netflix. Dang, it's not available for streaming or as a DVD.
Why not just pirate it?
Yeah, I suppose that's an option. Hold it!
It's easy to rationalize piracy when you picture some billionaire fat cat CEO lining his pockets with your money. But what about the author? He's a hardworking, creative individual, and he has nice hats. And he deserves to get paid for his work.
You know what? You're right. I've got a credit card in hand. I'm committed to buying this thing. To iTunes we go.
Looks like $38.99 to download the entire season below, right? Wrong. The downloads below are some free featurettes. The actual show isn't available yet. And that's correct. Last year is, but not this year.
Okay, iTunes is out.
Try Amazon. Nope.
How about Hulu Plus?
Nope.
Let's go to HBO.com. Nope. It won't let me buy this one show. It wants me to upgrade my entire cable service. But I don't have cable. What do I do now?
Ahem.
And there it is, Game of Thrones full complete 720p torrent. Are you sure about this? So anyway, oatmealing, this is a very long. Yeah. But oatmealing is the idea that you steal it, but you promise that when it's available to buy, you pay for it.
Well, see, that was you do with oatmeal.
Huh? Yeah.
Wait, what?
That was a great cartoon, but the weird thing about that was that at the time that cartoon was published, Game of Thrones was exactly like 2 weeks away from being released on iTunes.
Right.
And so the argument was that
current season is still not available.
Yeah, that's true. But the context of that strip was that I want to watch season one.
And you don't want to wait 2 weeks, right? Exactly.
Go ahead.
But isn't it okay if he downloads it and now watches it now and then pays for it in 2 weeks when it's available?
I think that's okay. And I have to admit that I did the exact same thing when it comes to digital comics, because I just got tired of waiting for Marvel and DC to start actually making their stuff available. So my rule was that if I had paid for it in some format before, if I'd gone to the comic book shop and actually bought this copy of Fantastic Four number 23 or whatever, then I felt as though I didn't have a right to do that, but morally I had no problem with then downloading a CBR. Now that they are actually doing day and date company-wide, I feel as though I can't do that anymore because they're offering this to me for sale. I understand the motivation. I just the only way that I can ever really, really disagree with somebody is when the reaction to this cartoon was so just Ellen so completely off the hook that so many people saying, you know what, I'm going to stick it to the man and show them and send them a message by downloading Game of Thrones. And it came down to you don't have a right to this. You're not entitled to this. You have not been wronged by HBO by the fact that they decided to release it when they wanted to release it. Right. If you decide that you don't really want to wait a year to get it, or you want to be able to watch it on your iPad and you don't want to have to again wait another year for it to come out on iTunes, that's fine. Admit that, but don't say that you're Patrick Henry making this incredibly brave stand. You are Johnny. No want to pay for stuff. You are not Patrick Henry.
That's huge. But you said a mouthful, and I think that speaks to that's a whole other issue that I have a big problem with. But I want to say two things. First of all, I recommend just reading the book if you want to see what happens. Great books, fantastically written books. And secondly, it doesn't really speak to the issue specifically in this comic, but a side issue that's also in the comic that Microsoft was showing at E3, which is a really cool thing. The new service that Microsoft will be installing into the 360 allows you to search once across multiple services. So you say, I want, you know, Game of Thrones or whatever it is, and it will search Amazon, it will search Hulu, it will search Netflix, and it will tell you where you can watch that one thing, which I think is a huge help. Because like this guy in the cartoon was doing, I've done many times, is like, which damn service is this?
Where do you
on?
Find it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Google TV's done that since day one, but nobody bought it, so nobody knows. It's a great mystery that the Logitech review actually does that. Hey, speaking of Game of Thrones and reading it, is it okay to listen to it on Audible.com, Jeff? I mean, that's okay, right?
Roy Dotrice. Roy Dotrice is the man.
Now, answer this question. You're plugged in. And I asked Tom Merritt. He didn't know. On the second to last episode of Game of Thrones, special guest star Roy Dotrice.
Yeah, he played the head of the pyromancers. He was supposed to play Grand Maester Pycelle, but I guess he had health issues and wasn't.
The pyromancers union guy was only on a couple episodes, so he could do that. Oh, that's fantastic! I wanted to know that. Thank you. I saw it as the crawl goes by. I go, who was he? Who was he? Roy Dotrice is absolutely the guy. Now, I think the fifth book, they had somebody else, but now Roy's come back and narrated it. You can get all five Game of Thrones books on Audible.com. And by the way, they're having a sale. You pick what's on sale, 40% off everything in the store if you're a member. See, the thing is, you got to be a member. And so here's the deal. I'm going to get you a membership and Game of Thrones, the first book, or whatever book you haven't read yet, free. For you, two credit needers. We've got a special deal for you. See, Game of Thrones is two credits because it's really long. It's 33 hours. So here's how you get two credits. Visit audible.com/twit2. audible.com/twit2. You get a 30-day trial of audible.com, and you can pick any two books. You can get two credits, so you could pick two books if you really want to get you most for your money. But if you want to listen to Game of Thrones, that's 2 credits. That'll be your first book. You can cancel at any time, pay nothing if you choose, and you get to keep the book forever. They have great apps for Android and iPhone, and soon for Windows Mobile on the new Windows Phone 7. I'm a big Audible fan. Andy, what are you listening to these days?
I just finished a book that I love the subject, not didn't completely love the book itself, but it was a great book. It was called Traffic. It's, as you can guess, you spend a lot of time listening to audiobooks, like when you're in traffic. So this is a book by, I'm furiously pulling up right now. It's by Tom Vanderbilt. And he spent a long time investigating not just like the science between discovering and identifying traffic flows, but also the psychology behind why traffic does the stuff
it
does.
I love this subject.
Yeah, it's a little bit. You really do have to stick. There are some books that are like this where you really have to stick with it until you really get your brain locking into the rhythm of the information that's being presented. The first couple chapters are kind of dry, but then it really starts to open up. And I was listening to this book, and I was in exactly the situation that this book was describing about how come every time there's like a road construction merge left sign, everybody immediately jumps into the right hand lane while there's also traffic just zipping. Right behind on the left. Well, here's the psychological principle behind it. And I said,
people are D-bags.
Yeah, that's why. Exactly. You're a bunch of jerks. That's why. Yeah, I can't wait. And I'll tell you, I just noticed this. I was browsing around. By the way, this is what you want to do when you get to Audible, is just look around. There's a new novel, from John Scalzi novel, narrated by our friend Will Wheaton called Red Shirts. And I can only think it's about the red shirt guys, right? It's a sci-fi novel about the... ship, the good ship, the Intrepid. So Will Wheaton narrates Red Shirts. Yet another. See, here's the problem. I'm giving you too many choices. This is the problem. The Audible is so great. There's so many great books here. Just become a member. Go to audible.com/twit2. Sign up. You'll get 2 credits. You get to decide what to spend them on. We've given you a lot of good choices there. And it's just the beginning of a lifelong love affair with audiobooks. I've been an Audible member for over 10 years. I joined in 2000. I have 500 books in my library. And I could not live. I could not work out. I could not commute. I could not drive carpool. I would be a zombie if I weren't for Audible. So thank you, Audible.com.
I'm recording my first audiobook.
You're going to do one, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm doing one right now. It's
what is it?
Exciting. It's going to be on Audible, actually.
Can you talk about it? Or is it a secret?
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's called Traveling in Space, and it's a science fiction book. It's not. We're about a third of the way through, and man, a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Very intense, but... it's so much fun. Yeah, I'm having a great time.
Well, come back on when that's out, and we can give it a big plug on that's exciting.
Yeah. Now,
people may not know, Jeff is an actor. I mean, that's. I guess you're kind of gathering that from the fact that, I mean, the Totally Rad Show apparently does not pay all the bills. So he's in a play. Tell us about the play, too. What's the play?
It's a sex comedy. So it's a kind of an R-rated adult situation, but it's wacky and over.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Is there a little naked Jeff Cannata somewhere in there?
Well, I am in my underpants.
Okay. Okay. That's good.
But there's females that are much more attractive than I am that are a lot less close.
What's it called?
It's got a very long, unwieldy title. It's called the Inventor, the Escort, the Photographer, Her Boyfriend, and His Girlfriend. it's a lot of fun, and we opened last week. We've been doing sellout crowds, and it's been really fun. So if you're in LA, you can go to jeffcanada.com and see the details on how to go.
Is this Hollywood Fringe?
It is the Fringe Festival. Yes.
Yeah, the Fringe Festival. How fun!
Yeah.
That title makes me think that the playwright really understands search engine optimization.
No kidding. Now, are you Jeff, the inventor, the escort, the photographer, her boyfriend, or his girlfriend?
I am her boyfriend.
That's. It looked like your hands. I just wasn't sure.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Yes. Awesome.
Fun.
That sounds like fun. Do you like doing live theater?
I love it. I love it. It's where I'm most alive and the most fun.
Me too. If I thought I could have made a living doing that, I would have done that. I did a lot, amateur theatricals, but or semi amateur. People paid to see it.
Hey, that's not amateur then.
San Francisco in a theater.
Nice.
But I miss it. But I don't think I could have made a living doing it. So.
Well, I don't think there's anything that prepares you better for doing what we do, being in front of the camera all the time and just having to be yourself.
That's exactly why I started doing it.
Yeah.
I always loved acting. I wanted to be an actor. And in college, I thought, well, I'll do radio. It's close. At least somebody will be listening. But maybe, maybe not. But then I was told by a program director in San Francisco, you should take some improv classes. I started that. Then I took some acting classes. And I said, I really liked it. And I kind of did it as a fun thing to do. And really, and I agree with you, Jeff, there is nothing more exciting than a live audience and a great script and just enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun. Well, there's two things we can look forward to from Mr. Cannata.
Indeed. I'm doing what I can.
Let's see what's going on with the week ahead. I think Tom Merritt's sitting in the TNT newsroom with the latest. Tom?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at the week ahead. Coming up Monday, June 11th, as you know, Microsoft Tech Ed in Orlando, Florida kicks off. Also, Apple's having some sort of developers conference. We'll keep an eye on it, see if anything comes out of it. Wednesday, June 13th, ICANN is set to announce who's getting the new generic top-level domains, .lol, .google. Find out Wednesday. All that and more coming up on Tech News Today this week. Back to you, Leo.
Guess it's kind of a light week after Apple. That's the thing. Nobody wants to do anything on WWDC week because they know this is there's going to be the news cycle will be owned for a little bit. So that's why Google did all of its announcements last week about the by the way, Google did have a good week. In the Oracle Google case, it's over. In fact, the judge basically gave some of Google's money back. It was an inconclusive copyright trial, patent trial. Oracle lost. Oracle has spent millions of dollars on it, and they essentially would be limited to the statutory damages, which can't be more than $150,000. They say we'll appeal to protect the broader Java community of 9 million developers. I think that one's over. Another case that was over with some extreme prejudice is a Motorola's patent suit against Apple. This kind of surprised me, or rather vice versa. Apple sued Motorola over things like, there were two patents, but one was slide to unlock. Judge Posner, who was sitting unusually on the district court for this one, basically said it was a frivolous lawsuit. Were you surprised by this, Andy? We did not get to talk about this on Mac Break Weekly this week because it happened, I think, on Thursday or Friday.
I got to say that I was surprised by it, but
it's a big, big loss for Apple.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I've learned, though, about all of these patent movements is that do not predict what's going to happen. Right. Do not predict the enforcement of the power of a certain patent. And also don't try to guess as to what a company's motive is in trying to enforce a patent. Because, man, from inside and from the outside, I've talked to people and I've just gotten so many different opinions all the way across the board about four different actions that I just have to sort of reset my head and said, that Zen thing where I know nothing.
Right.
I will talk to people. I will try to learn more about this.
It is arcane. The legal profession is fairly arcane, and the things they're debating perhaps don't fit the common sense standard. The trial was supposed to start tomorrow. The judge canceled it, saying, I have tentatively decided that the case should be dismissed with prejudice because neither party can establish a right to relief. Google, of course, owns Motorola Mobility, so Google was involved. He's not going to... Judge Posner said, I will not. I will delay the entry of judgment until I've prepared a full opinion. He says, that's not going to change my ruling, but I don't want to. I may change my reasons for my ruling. But he says, I tentatively conclude that it's admissible evidence of damages, that is Apple's claim for damages, with respect to those claims, do not create a genuine issue of material fact enabling it to withstand Motorola's motion for summary judgment. In effect, he's granting their motion for summary judgment and saying there's nothing here. There's no fire for this smoke. Kind of a big one because slide to unlock, Apple really, I think, felt that they had the rights to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it went the way it did because that's just to me that's just one of the epitomes of too broad a patent. And also, I test so many different Android phones and so many different third party phones out there, all of whom do this really really weird thing to get you to unlock it because they were terrified of violating a patent on something that's just so damn obvious. But I was surprised that there was a summary judgment. Most judges seem to be very very conservative and assume that if a patent was awarded, then it deserves to be defended. So that's the part of it that really surprised me.
The thing I liked is that Posner basically said that the patent system is broken, which I think is very, very interesting. No, he's a judge. And of course, it's the Congress that's going to have to create a new patent IP system for software patents. But the judge says, this is a terrible system.
I think we've just identified a district court in which there are not going to be a whole lot more patent suits filed. No,
Northern Illinois is not going to see any more of those. Google bought Meebo. Oh, really? Meebo, a web IM service acquired by Google. They'll put it on Google Plus, where it will disappear from sight forever. anybody use Meebo? Anybody? Meebo? Anybody? Why would they even bother? Maybe they got a
anybody
deal.
Use Google Plus? Anybody?
Google Plus? Anybody? If you're a Google developer, very popular. All right, we're going to take a break. I do want to talk about the security issues that we heard a lot about this week, including millions of passwords leaked and Flame. It has issued a request to self-destruct. Yikes. This is a scary story. But first, a word, as long as we're talking scary, about backing up your data with Carbonite.com. I talk about Carbonite a lot. For Mac or PC, it's exactly what you're looking for in a backup plan. Automatic. That means you don't have to think about it. You don't have to remember to do it. It just does it. It's continuous. That means even when you change, you change one document, that change is going to be immediately saved, not just locally, but also in the cloud. It's also secure, uses 128-bit SSL, so you can use it at any open Wi-Fi access spot. Whenever you're online, anywhere it's backing up, and you can add additional security, in fact, strong encryption, and you keep the key. They do not have the key. So it is a true trust-no-one product, as Steve Gibson calls it. He gave it a thumbs up for the Carbonite. And it's not even a cloud storage solution, or it's not intended to be. It's really a backup solution, but it is a very effective cloud storage solution. You can get online and log into your Carbonite account on any computer. They have smartphone apps free, tablet apps free as well. And there's your stuff. So it is cloud storage. And, boy, it starts as low as $59 a year. That's for everything on an internal drive. So if you want to take a laptop drive, not say, oh, I can only put this on and I got to worry. No, anything, all your data on your laptop drive is automatically on the cloud, automatically safe, and it's so easy to restore it. But I don't want you to take my word for it. As with all our advertisers, we want you to try before you buy. So visit Carbonite.com. The offer code is TWIT. That'll give you 2 weeks free, and make sure you do that, because if you do decide to buy, you'll get 14 months for the price of 12, whatever plan you're using. 14 months for the price of 12. Less than $5 a month to make sure that everything that you do on your hard drive is safe. That seems like a great deal to me. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Do check out the plans. They have a variety of plans, not just the single hard drive plan. They've got external drives, NASs, many computers for a small business, that kind of thing. So now that we're talking security, LinkedIn has 65 million users, 6.5 million passwords were leaked. And even though they were hashed with SHA-1. And so it's not a completely secure hash. You can reverse it. So what happened is that a hacker in a Russian forum uploaded 6.5 million passwords and said, "Help me, help me crack them." And so, if your password was something easy to guess, like Facebook, what you do to crack it is you type Facebook, you get the hash out of it, the SHA-1 hash out of it, then you search the database for that hash match. You got it. You got the guy's password. So all the bad passwords were guessed immediately. LinkedIn revealed through a tweet that it is looking into reports of stolen passwords and said, stay tuned. And finally, 3 days later, sent an email saying, yeah. I took that as an opportunity. Now, by the way, mine was leaked. There's a website. Gina Trapani told us about this on This Week in Google, called LeakedIn at leakedin.org, where you can type your password, say it's Facebook, and then it will give you the hash. And that's the hash. Then it searches the database for the hash. By the way, your password stays local. It's just a little JavaScript that does the SHA-1 hash. Then it sends that hash to their servers to check against the database. And yes, if your password was Facebook, it was leaked and cracked.
There isn't a week that goes by that some service that I'm part of sends me an email saying, oh, by the way, your password might be compromised.
Good news. If your password was sex, you're okay. Neither. So, see, sex is better than Facebook. Just in case you were wondering. Yeah, Last FM, same thing. And who else? There were three hacks this week all at once.
eHarmony.
eHarmony.
I don't
And I know you've been looking for the perfect woman for you.
My girlfriend's listening. I love you.
See, that's really just too damn bad, because when I filled out that profile, one of the things that I put down as my question is, do you have secure passwords and do you rotate them often? So if some of the blind dates have been set up or have been hacked,
nothing more attractive.
I want my $10 back.
Well, we've learned something, though, since in the last year since the Sony hack. Because the Sony hack, the passwords weren't even hashed. They were stored in the clear. So now LinkedIn says, well, at least we hashed them. Now, the next thing, of course, is to salt the hash and put the salt somewhere safe so that, in fact, no one can figure out what your passwords are. It's a minor detail. They'll get it right eventually. So we all know about Flame, right? This is the 20 megabyte malware that was discovered last week. It's been around for years, and the researchers who discovered it said it's pretty clear this was a government effort. It had modules, all kinds of modules, to do all kinds of things like turn on the camera and get pictures of people, turn on the mic and listen to people, get passwords and so forth. It was a massive malware attack, and had a module called Suicide that would delete everything, would delete itself. And it turns out they didn't use Suicide, but a command was issued at the Flame CNC servers to delete Flame if it was on your system. So they had apparently at least two suicide mechanisms built into Flame. That's how good it was. And Thursday, here's a good one. Because they keep analyzing it. It's huge. They keep analyzing it. It was written, you know, the glue code was written in C and C++. The glue code was written in Lua, which, as you know, Jeff, was used to World of Warcraft scripting language. It's also Lightroom was written in Lua. Right. On Thursday, a much more sophisticated capability of Flame, this is from the Ars Technica article, a much more sophisticated capability of Flame came to light when two of the world's foremost cryptography experts said the malware had achieved a mathematic breakthrough that could only be achieved or have been designed by world-class scientists.
What was the mathematical breakthrough?
It's doing good work. We have confirmed that Flame uses an as-yet-unknown MD5 chosen prefix collision attack that itself is very interesting from a pure science viewpoint. There are already some practical implications. Collision attacks, and by the way, Steve Gibson does a much better job of explaining all of this in Security Now this week. It's kind of sort of like what happened with the leaked-in password. It's two different sources of plain text generate identical cryptographic hashes. So let's say you got the hash from Facebook and it matched another hash from another password. That's a collision. It's long been theorized that these could happen. In 2008, a team of researchers using a bank of 200 PlayStation 3 consoles, finally a use for the PS3, found collisions in the MD5 algorithm, which is long thought to be very reliable. And they... You know, I mean, this isn't too useful. But anyway, apparently Flame is the first known example of this attack being used in a real-world environment maliciously. And it's how they got it wielded the esoteric technique to digitally sign malicious code with a fraudulent certificate that appeared to issue from Microsoft. It allowed Flame modules to hijack Windows Update so that if you had Flame on your system... And you did Windows Update, would update Flame as well. Just the side, nice side effect.
You want to keep up to date on it.
You got to keep those patches going. You wouldn't.
So, you know, you clearly, I don't understand this nearly as well as you do, but it seems to me that a suicide activation is a good thing, right? Doesn't that mean it's eliminating itself?
Well, it's probably to cover their tracks. So what is theorized is this is similar to Stuxnet. It was designed by some government, probably ours, maybe Israel, to attack other governments. It's a cyber warfare tool. And one of the things you want to be able to do, you've seen the Bourne Identity. You want to be able to push a button and pull your guys out and have deniability. So they built that into Flame. You push a button and they pushed, by the way, the button was pushed this week. We don't know by whom.
On it. Yeah.
But you can see somebody in the NSA said, oh, crap. Push the button, Joe. Joe pushes the button and Flame deletes itself.
So you're saying it was Biden?
Joe Biden, exactly. It's Joe Biden. Many people don't know. He's very skilled.
Sid, for those of you who are listening on audio only, that was Leo Laporte of California.
Well, they already have me in their database. Jeez Louise. It issued a self-destruct command this week. Whoever is going to write this novel, because we don't know the truth, so it has to be a novel, right? But whoever is going to write this novel is going to have such a good... This is a movie.
Clancy.
Oh, yes. Oh, what a great movie. The Flame story.
It really does scare you to think about all the different agencies all the way across the world that each might want to have an interest in checking out the contents of your traffic. And you think about, goodness gravy, how many different three-letter agencies from how many different countries might have a virus inside your computer just waiting to be activated because at some point someone thinks,
I got to figure that's going on. Did you ever see, it was a great Sean Connery movie called The Anderson Tapes or Anderson Files. Anderson Tapes. And Sean Connery's a bad guy, you know, kind of mid-level bad guy who's got a great plan to rob an entire apartment building. But it turns out that everybody in this building has been surveilled by one three-letter agency or another for weeks. And in fact, everybody knew that this heist was about to happen. And it happens, and then they go, oh, crap. And they all erase their tapes because they all have, you know, they know. Well, they knew, but we can't tell because then that would put us out of business. This is like that. Mm.
You guys mock, but if we had the Avengers, they would have taken care of this. No,
well, good news, because I think that they're available.
There is no problem that a guy with a bow and arrow and a woman with a 9mm handgun cannot solve.
Exactly. And a god.
Walker Texas Ranger taught us that. The Avengers proved it.
A guy with a really big hammer. There were some good moments, like the Shakespearean moment with Thor and Loki. Or, you know, like they're talking an iambic pentameter for 5 minutes.
Well, you can tell that he was working on Much Ado. You know, that's the other movie that's coming out.
Ah.
Yeah, Joss Whedon did a take on Much Ado.
Oh, I get
it. He even uses the line, I won't march to your fife, you know, which is classic Benedict from Much Ado.
Oh.
I put the audience to sleep.
There you go. The thespian speaks.
Let's also give credit is due. The blazer that Tony Stark wears in his first scene on the helicarrier, awesome blazer. I actually remember that blazer thinking that I'd love to own a blazer exactly like that. Stylish, practical, lots of pockets. I bet I couldn't afford it, but.
So on the negative side, all the plot and story.
Plot,
and on the
characters.
The nice outfits.
Lovely outfits.
Nice outfits. Two more stories. We're going to wrap this thing up because it is coming up on 5 o'clock Pacific time. First of all, you might be relieved to hear that the CERN particle accelerator in Geneva, Switzerland confirms, no, we were wrong. Neutrinos do obey the speed of light after all. Just so if you were worried, we made a mistake. It was faulty machinery. They announced, perhaps you remember that neutrinos did in fact go faster than the speed of light, a limit long recognized by scientists everywhere. But it was, something broke.
Oops.
Sergio Bertolucci said, hey, what are we going to do? it was a mistake. And finally, Neal Stephenson.
Yeah.
And Clang. You know about this? Of course you do. It's a sword fighting game. Is this on Kickstarter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the deal? Is it Neal Stephenson or just somebody named Neal Stephenson?
It's Neal Stephenson. Right.
Yeah.
And he's frustrated by the fact that sword play in gaming is not accurate and doesn't really reflect the actual tactics and weapons involved. And so
finally, the cause I can get behind.
Yes,
exactly. So and also it's a really, really funny video. It's one of the funniest Kickstarter videos I've ever seen. But it's also a really interesting project where he wants to have an achievable goal for this Kickstarter, which is to do an arena style combat game that involves swords. But the other idea is that he's going to essentially build a toolkit, build an API so that if you want to make your own sword fight game, this is going to be all the physics, all the tactics, all the weaponry, everything that you would want to happen if you want it to be accurate. You can actually use these APIs and make a really, really good sword fight game. But
here's the thing that baffles me. They've not made their goal. Shouldn't this be like oversubscribed by $1 million?
It's got knives. It's got a bald guy who writes good. It's got, that's got my $25.
8 days to go.
Yeah, well, we got some time here. Let me play the video. But before I do, we'll end with the video. I want to say thank you so much, Jeff Cannata, for joining us. It's so great to see you. Good luck on the play. Good luck on the Totally Rad show. And come up and see us sometime, okay? We'll have you on. I'd love to have you on.
Me too.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. It's good to see you. Is that a Louis Malle film in the background there on the poster?
Yeah, it's my favorite movie.
Wow. My Dinner with Andre. My Dinner with Andre. That's your favorite movie?
And Star Wars. two sides of the same coin.
Come up. We'll have lunch. We'll record it. It'll be great. I'll whine a little bit. You know, it'll be good.
I would love that.
Andy, it's always great to see you. Andy Natko, the co-host on Mac Break Weekly. We will have you tomorrow for our special edition of the WWDC Mac Break Weekly. And, of course, the Chicago Sun-Times and 5x5 TV. It's great to see you again. Thank you for being here.
Always a slice, Leo.
Yep. He's just love you, Andy. And do tune in tomorrow, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to begin our live coverage a little earlier than the actual keynote at WWDC. I will be joined by Tom Merritt and Sarah Lane from TNT and Chris Breen of Macworld to talk about the Summer of Tim, because I think it's going to be the biggest product announcement in the history of Apple. Just watch. It's going to be a huge, and we will be there live starting at 9:30 Pacific on twit.tv. We do this show every Sunday about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv. That's 2200 UTC. We'd love it if you watch live. I watch the chat room. We get some great ideas from the chat room. But if you can't, don't forget, we make audio and video available on our website, twit.tv, and everywhere else that podcasts are available to subscribe, including iTunes. A little bit of a program note. We are going to change the format of large video. If you subscribe to large video, we're going to change that format a little bit. And that's potentially going to cause some problems with some older devices, particularly second generation or earlier iPod touches will no longer be able to play the video. And the reason that's a problem is iTunes won't let you know what's going on. iTunes will just stop downloading, you know, stop putting the video on your iPod Touch. So what I want you to do, I think the site's not up. twit.tv/watch us. We were going to set up a page, but I guess we haven't done that yet. So we will set up a page with samples of both kinds of video for you so you can see whether it'll work. It's still going to be H.264. It's just we've changed the profile just slightly to make it more up-to-date and, frankly, more high-quality and accurate. But no matter what platform you use, the mobile version will always work for you. But I'm just saying, for those of you losing older devices who currently subscribe to large video, you might want to check to see if you get it starting next week. And if you don't, then you might want to either get a newer device or subscribe to the mobile version. Okay? And we will get a page up. It'll be twit.tv/watch. As soon as I can do that. And there are encoding tests right on our blog inside twit.tv. And you can all go there now because it's a Squarespace blog, so you can't bring it down. All right, without further ado, clang. I give you my friends, Neal Stephenson. Neal is, of course, the author of so many great books, including Cryptonomicon, Anathem. His new book is ReamD. He did his famous book is Snow Crash. Yep. The Baroque Cycle. Did you read that, Jeff?
It's one of my favorite books.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You are literate.
Love it.
Holy cow. I could not. I have to try again. There's an audio version of it. I'm going to try that because I just couldn't manage to get through it. Anyway, here is Neal Stephenson. Go ahead and try to rewind it. Here's Neal Stephenson talking about Clang, their new Kickstarter project.
Hello. I'm Neal Stephenson. I've been writing science and historical fiction for 3 decades. Well,
screw
that.
She looks like a monk straight out of Anathema.
I wanted to do a video game. A video game about something really cool and fun that I enjoy, sword fighting. For years now, I've been burning the midnight oil, learning everything I need to know to make this video game in a way that will be faithful to the hallowed traditions of swordsmanship. For example, in this ancient manuscript, which I uncovered in a crumbling monastery... That's okay, Sir Galahad. I'll go 20th century on your ass later. Okay. I don't actually have an ancient manuscript. This is a cookbook. But as long as my little ruse has been detected, why don't I take you on a tour?
It's a green screen.
This is our top secret
all
source.
One take.
Or at least it was until Sir Dumbass here went through my green screen. The decor is a little austere, but most of these guys aren't here for the ambiance. As you can see, we like to practice.
Wow.
In fact, we never
stop. He is a brave man.
So we figured, why not put all of this practice to some good use?
They're juggling knives over his head.
It takes a lot of people to make a sword game that doesn't suck. In addition to all the artists and animators,
so how much involved in this was he? I mean, is this like he's not Betty Crocker or Peter Norton here? He's like, it seems like he's actually involved.
Yeah,
apparently he's already a couple of years into this.
Wow,
I've only seen the video, so I didn't know he was into swords.
So $500,000 goal. They've reached 138,000, but they still have 28 days to go. And what do you get? You can pledge $10 and you get a thanks. $25, you get a game. $50, PDF art.
At $10,000, you get a sword.
Do you really?
You get a frickin' sword.
Steel longsword based on a design. You know what? That's tempting. Based on a design by noted swordsmith and four-world contributor Angus Trim. And a studio tour and lunch with the team. Wow. If I had $10,000, I would... He's thanking Bungie and Valve in this. What do you think?
It's good, two good places to be thanking.
Yeah.
In the video, he says that he's reached... They're going to Kickstarter now because they've reached the limits of what they can do to develop this with just people who... professionals who are enthusiastic enough about this to donate their time. Now it's time to actually pay people to work on it.
That's pretty cool. And this is a really good example of where Kickstarter is just pretty mind-boggling.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be the hero protagonist of that game.
I don't like sword fighting, but I like Diablo, where you just click your mouse on the bad guy's head and he blows up.
It's so much easier.
It's so much easier. Hacksaw retention, ignition technology.
Whatever the hell these guys do.
Oh, we got to get. All right, this is your challenge, Chad. Let's get Neil Stevenson on one of the shows here. He's trying to raise money. We got 28 days. He'll do a Skype call with us just to raise some money, yeah?
Go.
If Kickstarter had been around a few years ago, we wouldn't have been ready to take advantage of it. It's taken us a few years of sparring and experimenting and scratching our heads over this thing to get it to the point where it's ready to hire the talent that we need to produce a simple, playable game. There's not going to be a big open world where you can wander around killing badgers and harvesting magic weeds, because those things are expensive. So, by process of elimination, it's going to be an arena game. Lots of fighting, not a whole lot in the way of plot or character development. But that's kind of what we do for a living, so we can always add that stuff in later once this thing is up on its feet. We're ready. We've got geeks in suits of armor. We've got geeks in front of computer workstations. We've got a lot of people out there who like to play games with sword fighting in them and who might be ready to step it up to something a little bit more interesting.
God, I really want a sword.
Time to hire the professionals we need to turn all of that into something that'll work. So let's go.
Time for This Week in Cosplay.
I could pay rent for another year, or I could have a long sword, which would get me thrown out of my apartment.
If you have a long sword, you don't need to pay rent.
You don't need to pay rent. Stand and deliver. Sir. Oh, I forgot to say another twit is in the can. What's wrong with me? Thank you. You guys didn't even know the show had ended. I couldn't get any applause.